I raise my chin. Who cares about texts? I'm a strong, independent woman. I don't need anything from a man. I certainly don't require a note waxing on and on about the epic bang. Last night was last night. It was a moment in time, and it ended when it needed to end. Hell, maybe it ended at precisely the right moment, saving us from the awkwardness of, where do we go from here? Clearly, we go down the road to nowhere. The man has made it clear he's not dating. Like a blaze of sunshine illuminating a shadowed corner, I see what last night was. I see it so damn clearly. I time travel again to a month ago, to Charlie's I Have News party, when Dina tapped Zach's hand and asked, "Are you on the dating circuit again?" His answer was as clear as a 4-carat diamond. No. The man didn't hedge. He didn't hesitate with his answer. Holy smokes. I've been foolishly clutching the notion that we might become a little something. Maybe see each other again. Maybe even, gasp, date. Because, how the hell did this happen? I like Zach Nolan. Like a woman likes a man she doesn't just want to bang, but wants to see. Except he's not on the dating circuit. And that means I need to let go of these blooming feelings. I choose to. As I head into the store and watch his children tuck into books and scurry around shelves, I am opting to let go of that want. To forget I had any wish for more. It's best that I remain where I am. The one-time enemy, the maybe now and then friend, the aunt character in this story. I'm better off like this. I'm happier this way. Raising my chin, I declare myself resolved. I hang last night in the closet like a coat I've put away. I tuck this morning and the afternoon onto a shelf. I join Henry and Lucy, who've found a giant stuffed bunny to use as a chair. I settle in next to them and read paragraphs from Roald Dahl books they thrust at me, then Lewis Carroll, and Brian Jakes. I read until Lucy gets up, pointing at a shelf on the other side of the store. Be right back. A minute later, she announces that she found a Nancy Drew. I didn't know you liked Nancy Drew. She tucks a strand of hair behind her ear as she carries the book back to me. I don't know if I like Nancy Drew either, but she's a girl detective, and I decided I should get to know her better. She's really one of the first heroines in modern literature for young girls. Smiling, I lift a brow. Someone knows her women's lit. Did you read that somewhere? A knowing grin spreads on her face, and for a split second I see her father in that smile, that same wink and a nod that says, I'm going to share something with you. I feel a tug somewhere in my chest, tugging me toward him. Another feeling to shake off, all the way off. I was talking to Louise last night. She was telling me all about Jane Austen and Charlotte Bronte and the heroines they wrote. Then why aren't we getting Austen for you? Lucy rolls her blue eyes. And it happens again. That flash of her father. Have Lucy's eyes always been this blue? This cool? You have your father's eyes, I blurt out. She runs a hand over her hair. And my mom's hair and nose. She was really pretty. She was gorgeous, I say reflexively. Because she was. Chestnut hair, big brown eyes, and a face that you couldn't look away from. And maybe that's a thought I ought to shake away, too. Lucy flips open the hardcover. Anyway, Louise read some Jane Austen to me, and I don't think I'm ready for that, but I think I'm ready for Nancy Drew. I want to read about girls doing cool things, like solving crimes and running countries and battling dragons. I gesture to the books. Then let's get you some. After all, you need to know all your predecessors so you're completely ready when you're cast in Girl Power and you win your Oscar. What's predecessor mean? Those who came before? Yes, I need to know my predecessors, she says. I scoop up the books from her, ready to head to the counter, but she grabs my arm. You don't have to buy them for me. I can bring my dad back here. Their dad raised them to be polite. She knows it would be impolite if she didn't offer to have her father buy them. but the thought of not purchasing these books for her feels terribly wrong. The thought of leaving it to Zach feels worse. I'm getting her these books because this isn't about Zach. This moment is about this girl. This outspoken, curious, creative, wide-eyed girl who's trying to discover who she is. I'm not her mother, and I don't want to play house and pretend to be one for her. What I am is her friend, and I'm not going to miss this chance to lead her down the path to becoming a strong woman someday. I insist. Girl power, right? I bring them to the counter as Henry skips over, offering up Lyle Crocodile. As I prepare to pay, I spot a book of letters written by kids. Lucy will love that. She's in another section of the store now, so I add it to the pile, along with a journal that has a saying on the front that I know she will love. Afterward, we stroll to the other shops on Cecil Court, where I stop in the one with antique maps, picking up one of Tahiti for my friend Sloane, since that's where she and her husband went on their honeymoon. And at another store, I buy a Winnie the Pooh antique print that I'll give to Paige for the baby's room, once that little peanut is safely in her arms. Then I take Lucy and Henry to the London Transport Museum, where they clamber onto buses, trains, trams, and subway cars. Henry is a speed demon, climbing up and down everything as I snap photos. Soon enough, Henry is exhausted, yawning like he simply can't stop. It makes sense. It's 3 p.m, and we've been going nonstop since 8. On the way back to the hotel, my phone lights up with a text from Zach. For a sliver of a moment, I want it to be full of sweet words and invitations and offers to see me again. I want him to tell me he can't get me out of his mind and that he's ready to be on the dating circuit again with me and only me. But Virginia Woolf wouldn't require that, nor do I. I slide it open.
Zach, we're on time and on our way back. I promise I won't be late. I promise I'll be back exactly when I said I would. Also, I can't thank you enough for today.
My heart softens, turning to pudding. The poor man. I can read between the lines, and he clearly feels awful over what happened this morning. He's probably been beating himself up all day long. He likely still feels terrible for having slept in my room and missed whatever was going on with his kids. They probably sent him texts asking where he was. He has obligations, and he screwed them up this morning. And yet, I'm not going to let myself become one of those obligations. I can't ask him to take on any more. His plate is full. It would be rude. It would be wrong. Once we're inside, I carry a tired Henry through the lobby into the elevator, heading for my room. Zach should be here in 5 minutes to pick them up. Lucy scampers down the hall ahead of me, then spins around, a curious glint in her eyes. Do you wander the halls at night when you can't sleep? Why would I do that? That's what my daddy did last night. He couldn't sleep, so he wandered the halls. I raise a brow. Is that so? Yes. Isn't that silly? She turns and runs the rest of the way to my room. I'm not insulted he made up a tale for the kids. But I am several more degrees of resolute. That story underscores what last night was. A one-time thing. An incredible interlude of an evening that required a lie to return to reality in the morning. And I will keep doing the same, letting it exist as a sidebar, rather than a scene that needs an encore. Because an encore would require another lie. And Zach Nolan is not a liar. Nor am I. As soon as I set Henry down to open the door, the 7-year-old perks up, darting into my room as if he's discovered an underground cave full of wonders. Wow, your room is different. Your couch is over there. He points, and my gaze swings to the couch. To where it all began. Never have I ever started to fall for your father on that couch. But I don't let myself take an imaginary drink because I refuse to fall for him. Zach swings by at 4 on the dot to pick them up. I don't let on that my emotions rode the roller coaster 24 times today. Nor do I reveal that I'm thinking of him naked. Because I'm not. I'm not thinking of how he looked when he shed those lounge pants, or when he climbed over me, and definitely not when he spread my legs and entered me. But hell, I am. Tingles spread down my chest, and I do my best to ignore them, especially when the kids throw themselves at him in a fit of hugs and, "Hi, daddies!" Yes, that's who he is, not my lover, just their father. I fasten on a professional smile like I would with a client who needed my calm, centered side. "How was golf?"
"Charlie won."
I shoot a knowing grin. See, I can do this. I can play the last night didn't exist game.
Did he really win or did you let him?
I never let people win. I was tired.
He says that last word like we have a secret, but I'm not sure we do. He crouches down and looks Lucy in the eye.
"Can you take Henry back to the room? I'll be there in 5 minutes, I swear."
"Of course." She turns to me and offers a salute. "Girl power." I salute her back. "Girl power. But don't forget your books," I add in a stage whisper. "There might be extras in there for you, too. A few goodies." Her face lights up as she grabs the bag, then takes off, little brother in tow, big sister handling the task as capably as Nancy Drew. Zach stands, raking one hand through his hair. That thick hair I had my hands in. "Shake it off."
"Thank you again, Piper. That was so helpful."
"It was my pleasure," I say, keeping it cool. He's quiet, as if he's thinking.
"Listen, about last night."
Tension speeds through my bones at a lightning pace. Tension mixed with fear. Fear of rejection. Because nothing delightful has ever started with that word. Listen.
"I don't think I handled any of it well. I don't know how to do this. I need to figure out what..."
"Oh, hell no. I won't let him have the last word. Not after I therapied the ever-loving heck out of myself today. Not after I sorted out my messy stew of emotions all the while watching his kids like Piper freaking Poppins." I lift a stop sign hand. "Yes, about last night. It was a one-time thing. You're not dating, I get it. It's probably best that it shouldn't happen again, don't you think? After all, I don't want you to have to make up tales like wandering the halls and whatnot." My tone is bright with cheer. I am the queen of lighthearted, letting him off easy. He blinks, like I've splashed water on him.
"What?"
"Well, that's what you're going to say, right?" He shakes his head.
"I was coming here to talk to you. I figured talking was better than texting."
"It generally is," I say, as if I hadn't longed for a text. Because really, who longs for texts? Not this girl. I can rewrite the story of my feelings, edit out a hankering for any text.
"I just wanted to apologize for how I left this morning," he says. "That's what I wanted to tell you."
Ah, the apology. He came to offer one, like the polite man he is. I wave it off. "We're all good." I affect a yawn.
"Listen, I'm exhausted. I need to take a nap before I catch my flight."
His eyes fill with surprise.
"Are you leaving tonight?"
"Yes, I have brides to tend to in New York. Katya and I need to finalize her dress, and Sierra wants to look at venues, and Aisha is insisting I join her for a cake tasting, and I'm not about to turn that down."
"So we'll talk in New York then?"
"I'm staying another day." "Oh, sure. Naturally. Easy breezy. Look how it's done." He takes a deep breath.
"Listen," he says.
And there's that word again. That word that signals backpedaling, apologies, the beginning of what you don't want to hear.
"I felt terrible this morning. I was irresponsible. It was a careless thing to do, just to fall asleep with the volume off on my phone."
"So we won't do it again. We won't spend the night together. That's the easiest way to avoid irresponsibility." His brow creases.
"Wait, is that what you want?"
"What do I want? What I want is so much more than I can ever get from him. He's a magnet, pulling me to him. That's what he's been doing these last weeks, luring me in, making me want him. And when I want him like this, I feel vulnerable, too vulnerable, especially with a man I don't think can give as much of himself as I know I'll eventually want.
Hell, I don't think he can give me any of what I want. Because I don't want just sex. I don't want to bang him again for fun. I want more of him. And he's simply not available. He's off the dating circuit. And I don't want to hop on the booty call merry-go-round. He's not equipped to handle more. And I'm not prepared to be hurt when I don't get it. But for better or worse, we're in each other's lives, and I'd rather we be civil. Keeping my voice light and even, I answer, "What I want is a great experience for our friends. I want Charlie and Jessica to have the best wedding possible. I want it to go off without a hitch." He nods, absorbing my comments, digesting them, it seems. "And it'll go off without a hitch if that..." He waves to the room, the scene of the crime. "Doesn't happen again." I plaster on another smile. "Don't you think?" His eyes lock on mine, as if he's trying to find the perfect answer in them. He takes his time, a long time. Then he nods. "Sure. Why don't we focus on our friends? And on us being friends?" "Okay." His voice is flat. Mine is upbeat as I make my case. "Since it seems we're finally starting to get along. Besides, what else would we be now but friends?"
"Yeah, I don't know," he says, sounding thoroughly confused.
That's the issue. He doesn't know what we'd be, and I do. Because something became painfully clear to me this morning when I was out with his daughter and son. If he'd been there, I'd have fallen harder for him. I'd have craved even more of him. And I can't let that happen, because I'm not going to be able to have him that way. One more yawn for show, and I shut the door on everything I want. Later that night, when I'm safely buckled into my seat on the plane next to a harried businessman barking last-minute orders to an underling on the phone, I send the photo of the kids to Zach. "Piper, took this today. Thought you'd like it." He replies instantly.
"Zach, I love it."
I power down as the plane takes off, flying far away from him and that one night when, for a moment, everything fell into place.
Chapter 22. A few nights later, Lucy is wide awake at midnight. I stop by her room in our apartment. Her nightstand light illuminates her hair, tucked into a braid. She's on her stomach, propped on her elbows, furiously writing in one of her journals. Like father, like daughter. I've been up late since we returned from London, tackling unfinished work and briefs once the kids go to bed. I lean against the doorframe. "Can't sleep?" She flips over and slams the journal shut. On the front of the silver notebook are the words, "She wasn't looking for a knight, she was looking for a sword." "I'm still on London time," she remarks. I point to the notebook. "Secret letters?" She clutches it to her chest, whispering.
"Yes."
"Pumpkin, I'm not going to look at your secret letters," I say, stepping into her room and sitting at the foot of the bed.
"I know, I just..."
I pat her leg. "It's private, I get it."
"But I want to show you one someday soon, like I told you, like I put on my list," she adds quickly.
"Whenever you're ready." My eyes drift to her notebook.
"New journal?"
She smiles brightly.
"Piper got it for me in London, in the same bookshop where I got the Nancy Drew book. She bought me a book of letters, too. I sent her a thank you note, like you taught me to do."
A pang sharpens in my chest. I haven't seen Piper since I returned. She's mostly been out of the office, I suspect, and I've been busy. Correction, I've been keeping myself busy, because I am genuinely buried in work, and also because I don't know what to say if I see her. So I've packed my 9-to-5 schedule with meetings, lunches, appointments, and work, work, work. It's easier this way. "That was nice of her," I say, my throat tightening. "And good of you to send her a thanks. That's important."
"She's really into girl power, too."
"Why does that not surprise me?" I say with a sliver of a smile. Lucy sighs dramatically.
Fine. Since you asked, I was writing a letter to myself.
I didn't ask, but I love that she offered. I bet the recipient will enjoy it. She sits up higher, clasping the notebook tighter.
I wrote about the trip. I wrote a letter to myself so I don't forget how much fun it was and all the cool things we did.
God, I love this kid. I love her so damn much. My heart grows 3 sizes as she tells me more about her letter.
I wrote about the crown jewels and afternoon tea. Also, Dad, tea tastes gross. Why do adults like tea?
Probably because we're always tired and need the caffeine hit.
I don't like tea. It tastes boring. But I wrote about Louise. She's super cool, too, and I bet she'll be in girl power.
Wait, I thought you were into girl power. Now you're saying someone's going to be in it? I furrow my brow.
Girl power is the movie I'm going to star in someday.
She taps her pen against her lip.
Or maybe I'll direct it.
Her eyes turn the size of pizza pies.
Wait, what if I produce it? I could be the executive producer.
Any or all of those would be fantastic. But is this your way of telling me you want to be an actress? She laughs, shaking her head.
No, I like being me, but sometimes I like to imagine all the things I might do when I'm older. Anyway, I wrote about the bookstores and the old books and how good they smelled.
The pang deepens, digging sharply into my chest. To think I was stupidly jealous that Piper was going to tour bookshops with Graham, and instead she took my children and sent me a photo. More proof that I'm not ready to date again. I don't know what the hell to do with that kind of gesture. Since she sent the picture, hell, since I stood in the doorway of her hotel room, I've been wondering where I'd gone wrong. The answer? I likely went wrong everywhere. I shove the thought aside as Lucy continues.
Have you ever smelled an old book?
An image of the law school library comes to mind. Definitely, but I don't think I was as enamored of the scent of torts and statutes as you are of old books.
What are those?
Boring law stuff, I say dramatically. Sort of like tea. Go on.
Anyway, the point of the letter is I felt like I was having all these new experiences. That's what I like to do. I like trying new things and doing new things. Like mini golf and reading about detectives. And maybe I can try to learn French. That's how I can figure out what I want to do someday.
I tap the notebook. Then you need to keep all your letters safe and sound, because someday you'll be looking at them again, reading them. Someday your older self will look back and embrace the advice and the memories.
I will. And don't be offended that I don't let you read them. Someday I will. They're just personal.
I hold up my hands. They're yours, Pumpkin. I don't want to invade your privacy, but I do have one question.
Yes?
Are you ever going to try to go to sleep tonight? She laughs.
It's 5 in the morning in London. Also, check this out.
She grabs her dream big notebook and flips it open to her summer list.
I marked off 3 items.
She flips open the page titled, Things I Want to Do This Summer.
We went to London, I ate a sundae with all the toppings, and I stayed up past midnight.
I scan the 3 remaining items. Now you just need to share something hard, swim with turtles, and snorkel. I sense a water theme.
That's because I might want to be a marine biologist. That's another thing I want to try. But I don't think I can do those in New York, though.
Unless you want to snorkel in the Hudson. Her nose crinkles.
Gross.
I can think of few things grosser than snorkeling in the Hudson.
Maybe we can go someplace where snorkeling is better?
She gives me puppy dog eyes. Are you angling for me to take you on another trip? She smiles like she's oh so innocent.
What a great idea, Dad. Look at all the pages left to fill. That's a lot of experiences. That's what life is all about.
She takes a beat, like she's prepping herself.
That's what Mom said to me. Do everything. Try everything. Be unafraid.
A lump knots in my throat. But it's not from missing Anna. I've learned how to move on. Hour by hour, day by day, week by week. Time is the greatest friend grief could ever ask for. The months and the years ably do their job, lessening it, then lovingly untying the hold it has on you. This feeling strangling me? It's because Lucy is following this great advice. following it to the letter. She's bold and unafraid. I'm so damn proud of my daughter, and admittedly a little jealous. I open my arms for a hug. Have I ever told you how amazing you are? She snuggles into my arms.
Every day. But I like hearing it because I think you're awesome too.
When she lets go, scooting back on her bed, she shoots me a serious gaze.
You should write a letter. If there's anything you want to tell yourself, write it down.
She beckons me closer once again, like she wants to share a secret.
Sometimes letters are even better than lists.
I gasp in an exaggerated fashion. There's something better than a list? Blasphemy.
What's blasphemy?
It's when you say or do something that goes against the core of what you believe. Her eyes narrow quizzically.
I believe in lists and letters.
Of course you do. I'm just teasing. Now, try to go to bed. You have a full day of ridiculous, insane, awesome fun at summer camp tomorrow. Miranda is going to pick you and Henry up at the end of the day and then take you to Emmy's house. I'll get you from there because I have a late appointment with a client.
Be a shark, Daddy.
I make a snapping sound like a great white's teeth. I promise. She yawns and tells her Haven smart home device to
turn off Agatha Christie.
Agatha Christie? I ask as the light dims. You named your lamp Agatha Christie?
It's one of the books we checked out in the rare bookshop. It was cool.
Of course. I leave, feeling Piper's presence. She's everywhere. Notebooks and names of smart home devices, girl power and lists. It's not even intentional. It's not like she left a pair of gloves behind on a date so I'd have to call her. She's left imprints on my kid just by being herself. I retreat to my bedroom, scrub a hand across the back of my neck, then grab clothes for bed. After I brush my teeth and flop down on the mattress, I park my hands behind my head and follow my daughter's advice. Dear Zach, from a couple days ago in London, you should have done a lot of things differently. Me. The next day, I mumble a hello to Piper when I walk past her office, but she's on the phone, talking coolly and calmly to someone about an arrangement of cabbage and chrysanthemums. She shoots me a smile, then rolls her eyes as she points at the phone, as if to say she's stuck on a call. But what would I say if she wasn't? How about them cabbages? How the fuck does anyone attempt dating anymore? I can't even manage a conversation with a woman I slept with. I spend the afternoon burying myself in Taylor's case, the perfect way to occupy my brain with something that's not Piper, especially when I meet up with my client at a coffee shop to review the status of her divorce filing. Taylor drags a hand through her hair.
So this is what it comes down to. 6 years of marriage and he's trying to pull this?
Her eyes are hard, her jaw tight.
I can't take it anymore. I can't take another late night call or early morning text where he tells me what he's going to try to take from me.
I draw a deep inhale. She needs to make the next choice on her own, free from my desire. My goddamn natural instinct to knock her ex down to his knees. What do you want to do? It's up to you. She purses her lips, breathes through her nose, then answers like she's underlining each word.
I want him to leave me alone. I want him to stop calling me. I want him out of my life. And I don't want him to touch my restaurant ever.
A small grin tugs at my lips. Say the word. Her eyes darken.
Play hardball, Zach. Can you play hardball with him? I can't risk losing my business.
I rub my palms together. That's my sport. I'm fully fueled, ready for battle. When I leave, I call her soon-to-be ex-husband's lawyer and let him know exactly what he can do with his client's requests and precisely what will happen if his client sends so much as a text message asking what's on the menu at her restaurant ever again. Do you understand me?
I had no idea he was still doing that,
the man says, sounding as if he's been caught off guard. The other week, I called politely and asked it to stop. Now I don't feel such a need to be polite. Get a leash on your client. Tell him this is being settled between you and me, or we will go to court and I will not back down.
I'll talk to him.
Yes, you do that. Do that when I hang up. Is that clear?
I will.
Do not ever have him call her with these spurious threats again. He's not touching her business. He's not touching a single dime from her restaurant, and I only want to hear from you. I do not want him to call her again till this is done, and even then, I see no reason why he ever should. Is that absolutely, completely without question clear? He takes a long, nervous beat before he says again that he'll talk to his client. I remind him how it will end up if he doesn't sort this out. When I hang up, a wave of satisfaction rolls over me. At times like this, I'm the warrior. I'm the dragon slayer. I'm righting the wrongs. I can handle anything, anyone, any argument. Bring it on. I only wish I knew one-tenth as well how to handle this uncharted territory of falling for a woman. The scent of well-seasoned vegetables greets me when Emmy answers the door. Smells incredible. She waves me in.
Tastes even better. I made a spicy dish for us, and a totally bland, boring one for the kids.
I look around her spacious pad on the Upper West Side. Speaking of the kids, where are they?
Jamie took them to the park,
she says, naming her oldest, who's 16. Where's Jenna? That's her 14-year-old.
Piano lesson, and Greg is on his way home.
Her husband. My stomach rumbles. How far away is he? She rolls her eyes and grabs some plates.
He's on Wall Street. It'll be a while. I'll feed you first.
Best sister ever.
Only sister ever.
True. Caught me on a technicality, I say, rolling up my sleeves and washing my hands. She nods to an open bottle of wine.
Want a glass?
Sure. I'm not driving tonight, I joke, since I rarely drive, seeing as we live in the city. She pours, then serves us both, and we sit at the island counter. My sister has always been a good cook, so I groan in pleasure at the first bite. This is amazing.
Tell me about Piper.
I choke on a forkful of rice. A hard cough racks my body. What? The question comes out strangled. Emmy sighs heavily, shaking her head as she takes a bite.
Serve it up. Give me the deets.
Hello, give me the Heimlich, I say roughly, since I'm still choking on surprise. She waves me off.
You'll be fine.
My coughing settles, and I take another drink of the wine. Good wine. What's the vintage? Maybe the distraction ploy will work. Her eyes are vipers, her fangs out.
Seriously? Just tell me. I know I'm onto something.
I dodge to the right.
Why are you asking? The kids can't stop talking about her. Piper this, Piper that.
I shrug it off. We're part of the same group from college. It makes sense we'd spend time together. Plus, the kids know her from after school at the office. So when she offered to look after them on golf day on the trip, I jumped at the chance for some tea time with the guys. Emmy nods as if she's taking it all in.
The old college crew. Right.
Ah, I sense an escape route and open the hatch and dive down. Yep, exactly. I take another bite, murmuring my appreciation, hoping that does the trick.
And did you need alone time wandering down the halls at the hotel one night, too?
My shoulders tense. She should have been a lawyer. Oh, wait, she is. We are peas in a pod. I try to make light of it, because I've never been able to get away with anything thanks to Lucy and Henry blabbing about my habits. Couldn't sleep, and the sitter conked out in the room. I tried to call and ask your advice, and then decided to just walk around. One highly skeptical brow rises up to her hairline.
To Piper's room?
I scoff. No. She folds her arms across her chest.
Bullshit.
I sigh. Why are you asking?
Because I think there's something going on, and judging from your extreme levels of broodiness the last few days, I'm guessing it's not quite going how you want.
I shrug and throw in the towel. It's not going. My voice is heavy, giving away everything I tried to keep inside. Opposing counsel won this round, it seems. Emmy downshifts to gentle, setting a hand on my arm.
Well, have you told her how you feel?
What do you mean, how I feel? Now my sister's speaking Turkish.
You clearly feel something for her. Maybe try letting her know.
I open my mouth to peel off a round of reasons why I shouldn't. She only wants to be friends. We need to focus on Jessica and Charlie. I have kids. I don't know if I can give her everything she deserves, and I don't know if she wants what I can give. My sister seems to sense the direction of my protests. She squeezes my arm.
What can it hurt to try?
I spend the rest of the night telling myself she's wrong. The part of me that wonders if she's actually onto something.
Chapter 23. Baby clothes. A sea of pink and yellow, blue and peach, and sweetness as far as the eye can see. So many awesome little adorable things that I must buy. Cute little t-shirts with sassy sayings, adorable onesies with giraffes on them, and jammies with cartoonish panda bears. I grab one, then another, then one more. Wait, look at all those blankets. Swaddling blankets, nap blankets, sleep blankets. How can one baby need so many blankets? I have no idea, but the possibility that my niece-to-be might is thrilling. Grabbing my phone in the middle of the department store, I call Paige. It's 10:30 in the morning, but she answers right away. Hey, everything okay? I have 2 minutes before a conference call with the superintendent, she says. I love it when you talk fancy administrator language to me. I run my hand over a soft robin's egg blue fleece as I return to business. First, is everything okay with your baby mama? Yes, Stacy's doing well. Just a few more weeks now. But there hasn't been any more drama, just updates on the baby. She's the size of a honeydew melon and the length of a head of romaine lettuce. I make a mental note to run that past Bud Rose as a possible centerpiece, then dive into why I called. Second, how many blankets does the lettuce-length, melon-sized baby need? 5? 7? 10? I mean, she might need a lot of blankets. Paige laughs. I don't know, maybe 1 or 2. I scoff as I thumb through the pile of the softest pink blankies, including one with, eek, bunnies, sweet, precious bunnies. That doesn't sound right. I'm getting her 10. Love you. Okay, thanks, bye. Don't jinx us. I hear her say as the call ends, and I scoop up 5, 6, make that 7 blankets and bring them to the register. As I leave, I pat myself on the back, both for stopping at 7 and for having successfully avoided thinking of Zach and all that went wrong in London. Well, until he popped into my head just now. Strong fingers dig into my scalp, and I groan obscenely in pleasure. I'm not even remotely embarrassed at the sounds coming out of my mouth. There is little that feels as good as a shampoo. This is better than a soak in the tub. More heavenly than lying on a beach. You are so good at this. You should do it for a living, I tease. Adrian chuckles as he massages the shampoo throughout my hair. I'll take that under advisement. See if I can make it as a stylist in New York. You never know. You might have enough talent. I open my eyes to shoot him a knowing grin. You do know that's how I found you years ago. Women everywhere were whispering about your shampoos and blowouts. They called them orgasmic. He shimmies his shoulders as he works his magic. I'm not too shabby, it seems. They were all gabbing about you. I'm not kidding. You are the talk of the Whisper Network. There's this stylist in the East 60s who gives the best blowouts. We both laugh at the sound of that. Well, the boys do say that about me too. I snicker, giving him a wink. Why am I not surprised? He waggles his hips as he kneads in the shampoo. When you got it, flaunt it. I'm enjoying my singleness, thank you very much. Now tell me more about London. I keep my cool, answering lightly. London was great. That's all I want to say. He already asked me how London was, and I said it was fantastic. No need to say more. I settle deeper into the leather seat, savoring the feel, craving the distraction. All of this, the shampoo, the conversation, it diverts my thoughts from that night and Zach. I don't want to spend so much brain power on someone I can't have, so I search for other topics, settling on a safe but amusing one. Did I ever tell you the story of how I started my first business? As a wedding planner? He asks as he rinses the shampoo. No, as an entrepreneur. When I was in high school, I bought a bag of blow pops every day from the local drugstore for $2.
Before homeroom, I'd usually sold them all. 25 lollipops at 25 cents a pop for a little more than $6 per bag. Made $4 profit. Used it for lunch money. So yes, my first job was earning lunch money selling blow pops, I say, with a naughty twinkle in my eye.
It's hard to say that without it sounding dirty, isn't it?
But I was so innocent. And now? You're not so innocent, blow pop girl. I tut. Please, I'm a good girl. He pours conditioner into my hair, working it through.
I'm not so sure about that. You have that look about you.
What look? He stops, walks around me, and peers at my face. His silvery eyes seem to read me like a crystal ball. What's wrong? He shakes his head.
Why don't you tell me what's really on your mind, love?
What do you mean I'm telling you? He rolls those metallic irises and heaves a dramatic sigh.
Piper Radcliffe, I have known you for more than a decade. I've seen you fall in love, get married, get divorced.
Shh. He waves a hand.
No one is here. And I've seen you date men you like and men you might love. And there is one thing all those ups and downs have taught me about you.
What's that? I ask cautiously. He returns to my hair, the maestro resuming his podium before the symphony.
It's that you love to ramble and share tales of days gone by when you don't want to tell me what's really going on.
I scoff. I tell you everything. He arches a brow, staring down at me from a strange inverted vantage point. He's a cat, and he won't lose this staring contest.
Why don't you tell me, then, what happened in London that has you dodging the question, how was London?
This is not fair, I say with a huff.
Life's not fair, but what is it about my question?
Because you have my hair in your hands and you're demanding stuff of me. He laughs as he finishes with the conditioner.
Ah, so there is stuff to tell.
Please, you know your mind-reading skills are spot on. Of course there's stuff.
So, tell, I want to know.
I draw a deep breath, then blurt it all out. I slept with Zach. It was amazing. The next morning when his kids called, he took off like he was doing the 100-meter dash, then kind of ignored me all day, but whatever, I got over that. And when he wanted to talk that night, I let him down easy for both of us. He doesn't want a date, he's said as much many times, so I said, let's be friends. And now everything is back to normal. I slap on a cheery grin. Adrian lifts a brow.
I think that was mostly the truth, except for the bald-faced lie at the end. Nothing is back to normal. You don't sleep with someone you fired missiles at for years and then go back to normal. How is it truly between you two?
I've been busy, I say, glad my schedule has been packed. Fittings with Katya and so on, and when I saw him the other day, it was cordial.
And how does that make you feel?
I look up at my friend, and for the first time in days, something unknots and lets relief flood in. I haven't whispered a word of our night to anyone, not my sister and clearly not Jessica. But telling Adrian feels like I'm untying a shoe that's too tight. Wanting Zach is a gnawing ache I've clutched and kept secret. But talking is a balm, a salve to the wound. Sad, I say softly. It makes me sad. He finishes the rinse, drapes a towel around my neck, and offers a hand. He tugs me up from the chair, parks his hands on my shoulders, and stares fiercely at me.
So, what are we going to do about that?
I don't know. He's not on the dating circuit. I can't change that. All I can change is what I do, and I need to keep moving forward.
Or maybe you need to tell him you want to have hot hotel sex with him again. Then order room service after and have him take you to the movies the next day.
I laugh at his way with words. Why, yes, I'll order that up from the kitchen now.
Fantastic. It'll arrive at your room in 35 minutes.
He escorts me to his booth and combs out my wet hair.
Or you could ask him to dinner and see what happens.
I shudder.
Oh, please, don't be such a princess.
I have nothing against asking a man out. I just don't want to be rejected.
No one does. Fear of rejection is part of being human. So is facing that fear and vaulting over it.
I swallow thickly, considering.
You want me to ask him to dinner? He smiles at me in the mirror, nodding exaggeratedly. I do. Stylist's orders. My stomach twists. What if he says no? If he says no, I will give you a free orgasmic shampoo and blowout. It's not a bad consolation prize. That's tempting. Of course it is. Now tell me what he was like under those delicious clothes of his. I don't tell all. I'm a lady, of course. But I give enough tidbits for Adrian to whistle in appreciation. Which is only right. Zach deserves whistles, cheers, and ovations for the magic he performs in the sheets. When I leave, I head to meet Jessica for lunch as planned, since she's back in New York, working in her office here for a few days. As I walk up Madison Avenue, I run through my call list, chatting with Bud Rose, with Jonathan at the Lux, and with concierges across town. Anything to keep my mind off Adrian's advice. His sage advice? His insane advice? Which adjective applies? I don't know. All I know is I haven't felt this kind of longing, this kind of ache in my heart since I met Jensen. I switch off the faucet of thoughts, choosing instead to admire the she-she shops and cute boutiques, the florist on the corner with a display of cornflowers and daffodils, all while savoring the June sunshine that warms my shoulders. Yes, I'll just focus on the weather. So much easier that way. When I arrive at the cafe to discuss the next set of pre-wedding fiestas, Jessica has already snagged an outdoor table. Sporting big sunglasses and a huge grin, she pops up when she sees me and throws her arms around me. So good to see you. She holds me tight, like we haven't been together in ages. I hug her back, curious. Good to see you too. But what's with the exuberant welcome? I saw you last week. Not that I don't love seeing you, but you seem particularly peppy. She gestures to the seat across from her, and I grab it, dropping my purse on the empty chair. Her brown eyes sparkle with a festiveness I haven't seen on anyone in a long time, and she seems to be positively bursting with news. Piper, she whispers giddily. Yes, I say, a little cautious, but excited too because her enthusiasm is infectious. You remember my plan to do a few pre-wedding parties, London and here? Sure, of course. We need to skip the New York one. Can we move up the wedding? It's your wedding, sweetie. We can do whatever you like. She claps twice. Thank God, because I want to switch it to next month. And a skywriter wings her message across the clear blue canvas of the day. You're pregnant? Yes. Chapter 24. 6 weeks pregnant. Anguilla. A July wedding. I repeat those three key facts as I tuck into work at my office later that afternoon. Because, hello, I have to plan a summer wedding in a fancy tropical locale in a mere 4 weeks. Jessica doesn't want to be huge, as she put it, for her wedding. I reassured her that she probably won't show at 10 weeks, and likely not even till 5 months. But she was having none of that. Her parents are conservative, so it's better off this way, she'd said. I'm not so sure they'll be fooled when she pops out a baby less than 7 months after the wedding, but who am I to argue? Especially with a Prager's lady. Sheesh. Bridezillas are easy as pie next to that. Here I am at my desk, diving into a veritable 4-week all-nighter as I take a crash course in pulling off a destination wedding in 1 month. 1 mere month. So much to do. So damn much to figure out. I barely have time to think about anything else, let alone to marinate on Adrian's advice about Zach. Dinner? It's going to take all my super wedding planner strength to squeeze a meal in at all in the next 4 weeks. I spend the afternoon researching the ideal venue in Anguilla, making calls to my contacts in New York to ask for referrals. I lob in a quick call to Jason, just in case he knows anyone. Bloke expert at your service, he says when he answers. I smile. I need your expertise, but the best man, not the bloke part. Let me switch hats. I can hear him pretend to put down the phone, then bring it back to his ear. All right. Best man extraordinaire here, How may I assist you?
Any chance you know anyone in Anguilla? My client wants a wedding there next month.
Someone has a bun in the oven, he says, sing-song.
That obvious?
As lipstick on a collar.
I sigh. I know. Now I need to pull off the impossible.
But that's what you do. This is a chance for you to show your mettle.
I take it that's a no, you don't have any tips for Anguilla?
Sorry, I haven't made it there yet, but a lad can dream.
I shift gears. Tell me more about your dreams. How is the pursuit of your lady love going? He chuckles like he finds the situation thoroughly amusing when he says,
She hates me.
Sounds perfect for you then.
Indeed.
We chat more about his dilemma. Then I hang up and cuddle up with Google for the next few hours. I learn that they need to be in Anguilla 40 hours before they tie the knot. Easy enough. I learn the cost of a marriage license. And I find a great room rate at a hotel for about 20 people, which is the number Charlie Warbucks wants to send to the island. But finding a wedding spot is a wee bit harder. After several exhausting phone calls, I'm a teeny bit closer, but only in the sense that I've been told 10 times, we'll check our calendars and get back to you. I drop my forehead on my neat desk. There's barely anything on it except a laptop and a mug, and mutter against the wood. Who do you have to screw around here to get a wedding venue in Anguilla?
I know someone.
I startle, lifting my face. Zach stands in the doorway, doing that tie thing. God, why does he have to look so damn sexy smoothing his green tie? His emerald green silk tie that I want to grab to yank him to me, then hike a leg around his hip and kiss the hell out of him. You know someone who'll trade sexual favors for a wedding venue? I ask. He laughs, leaning against the doorframe.
If you're particularly keen on trading a BJ for a spot on the beach, I suppose that could be arranged, but I don't think it's required.
I laugh. My days of selling blow pops are over. His brow creases.
Blow pops? Those gum-filled lollipops?
I tell him the story of my first real gig, and he laughs.
I bet you drove all those boys crazy when you licked the sour apple ones.
How did you know I liked sour apple?
Good guess.
Fine, I liked sour apple. But seriously, who do you know in Anguilla?
Taylor's sister. She's one of my clients. I basically got her dickhead husband's lawyer to curl up in a ball, quivering like an elephant does when it sees a mouse after I told him how things were going to work.
Zach blows on his fingernails, pride practically wafting off him.
Congrats.
Now that I understand him better, his motivation, that seems less like seeing who lands bloodier punches in the ring and more like fighting for someone who needs a knight with a sword. That's great. He lifts a hand and pats his own back. This Zach is the one I'm used to. The man who stood in my doorway in London seems long gone. But something is different about this Zach, too. He's not needling me. He's not shooting arrows. Does that mean he's lost all interest? Will he turn me down if I ask him out for soup and crackers? My chest tightens, and nerves scurry up and down my arms. I don't know what he'll do or say. That's the issue. The hairy, thorny, scary issue. But that's why asking someone out is taking a chance. It's stepping off a cliff without a safety net. He tips his forehead in the direction of his office.
Want me to ask her if she can grease any wheels?
That would be great.
Give me 5.
5 minutes later, he returns, handing me a sheet of paper with a number and a name on it.
Shalise at the Hayward Grand Ocean Suites says to give her a call in an hour.
Gratitude and glee are like silver and gold flowing through my veins. Thank you. Thank you so much. The enormity of how much he's just helped me has me riding a rush of endorphins that makes me brave enough to try laying a bridge to asking him to dinner. Also, this is nice, I say, pointing from him to me.
Nice?
The word comes out like he's drunk acid.
This is nice.
Quickly, I explain. Getting along like this,
I'm glad we can. But my throat is clogged with too much anxiety to say what I truly want. Have dinner with me. Have a drink with me. Take me out.
It's nice. He steps closer to my desk. Yes, nice. Us talking like this is nice. Why is molasses coating my tongue? Years and years of arguing with this man have made the fear of rejection strong in me.
His eyes narrow.
You like being friends?
My stomach swoops with worry. Oh God, is he setting me up? Is he prepping for a dig? Have we gone back to fists up, guns ready, dueling office mates?
I like getting along with you, I say, choosing honesty even though it's gut-wrenching. This is like turning my heart inside out and hoping it still beats properly.
You do?
I do. My voice wobbles. I don't know what he's getting at, why he's firing all these questions my way. He comes around my desk and sits on the corner, closer still. I can smell him, like cedar and sex and the man I want to lick.
Listen.
That word pierces me, making me crumble. That's the word he used in London. Is he going to let me down again? I'm listening. My tone is even, giving away nothing, as I don my armor once more. His eyes meet mine, and he holds my gaze.
I don't think I said everything that needed saying in London.
Tension flares inside me, chased by a dash of hope. You didn't?
First, I should have said something to you the next day, and I didn't.
I hold up a hand, grabbing his, absolving him. Don't think twice about it. Don't apologize. We're good on that.
But I should have said something. Should have reached out to you sooner. I'm new to all this and figuring it out.
It's fine, I say, reassuring him. I swear, it's fine.
Good.
He looks down at my hand, then back into my eyes.
But you need to know, I'm still replaying that night. It's on a loop in my head, I swear.
I'm warm all over. Please, please, please let him feel the same. Is that so?
I can't stop thinking about you, he says, not looking away.
My skin tingles. Your mind must be an interesting place.
His eyes darken. Very interesting.
For a second, I fear he wants only a rebound screw. But it's time to vault past fear. I can't take it anymore, this not knowing. I draw a deep breath and step off the cliff. Have dinner with me, I blurt out. Scrubbing a hand across his jaw, he groans low and growly. Maybe in frustration? I tense for a second. You don't want to? I ask, quieter. He stares at me, his eyes intense.
Oh, I absolutely want to, but I was planning on asking you, and you beat me to it.
My lips curve in a wicked grin. Guess you need to be faster then, I taunt. He arches a brow.
Do I now?
He moves off my desk, plants his hands on the arms of my chair, and stares at me. I heat up like a star. He leans in close, his face near mine, his voice demanding.
Go out with me.
I can't stop grinning. Yes.
Good, because I want to see you again. I want to take you out. I want to date you. I don't just want to fuck you.
I'm buzzing with happiness. It's the same for me. He clasps my jaw, holding me tight.
But right now, I'd really like to fuck you.
The way he says those words sends heat to my core. A pulse beats between my legs. I grab for his tie, but this time he is faster. He stands, lifts a hand, and slowly, deliberately, unknots it, loosening it. Zach, like this, in his tailored slacks and crisp shirt, his green silk tie slightly undone, poised to take me, is the sexiest thing I've ever seen. He leans over, running his nose along my neck, setting me to flames. Just like I remembered. Just like I think about every goddamn night.
Every night, you say?
Every night, every morning. You're in my head and under my skin.
I'm on fire. Please,
I beg. He pulls back and smirks. Since you asked for it. He claims my mouth. He owns me. Owns my lips. Owns this kiss. He kisses like a man who won't be denied. Like he came in here with one intention. To have me. It's a dominating kiss. A kiss he controls as he holds my jaw, angles my face, and devours my lips. It's a kiss that won't stop at kissing. That can only be a prelude to fucking. He's hard and ruthless. And I swear it's like he's making up for the way we've both been lost since we returned. I don't feel lost anymore. I don't know where we're going. But I feel found. The only issue is my door's wide open. I slide a hand up his chest and push him away.
Door,
I pant. He stands, walks around my desk, and closes it. Locks it shut. He returns to me, moves my laptop to the side of the desk, then sets me on the wood. Exactly where I want to be right now.
Chapter 25. This is so much better. This is light years better than the alternative. The alternative of having said nothing, having done nothing. Because I spoke my mind, I get to have this. I get to have her the way I want her, craving me as intensely as I crave her. With her legs spread, her palms digging into the edge of the desk, she's ready. And once I unzip my pants, I slide inside her. Sparks rain down my body, crackling across my skin as I close my eyes. An obliterating wave of pleasure rolls through me. It's instant and electric and fucking fantastic the way it knocks down.